Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, Radio Havana Cuba, and Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. We'll start with several reports from this week's G7 summit in London. In meetings before the summit began, Japan and the United States made agreements about opposing China in every way possible, from the South China Sea to Taiwan to Hong Kong. As reported last week, the UK is sending its new aircraft carrier to the Indo-Pacific region along with a flotilla of warships called the Carrier Strike Group. France, the Netherlands, and Germany are joining in the expedition in response to China's growing influence in the region. They will get together for military exercises in the Asian waters this summer. In Myanmar, pro-democracy forces say that they have created a People's Defense Force to protect civilians from the military crackdown on protesters, with 769 said to have been killed so far. U.S. pharmaceutical giant Pfizer is reporting a huge increase in profits from the COVID vaccines. NHK Japan.
The top diplomats of Japan and the United States have affirmed their countries will strengthen ties to realize a free and open Indo-Pacific. They'll also work together to deal with China, North Korea, and other challenges. The two met ahead of the Group of Seven Foreign Ministers meeting scheduled to start in London on Monday. Japan's Foreign Minister Motegi Toshimitsu and U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken agreed to oppose any unilateral moves to change the status quo in the East and South China Seas. They agreed on the importance of peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait. They affirmed the need to establish robust supply chains among countries that share common values in light of China's economic rise. Blinken shared details of a U.S. policy review toward North Korea recently completed by the Biden administration. The G7 foreign ministers' talks will be their first face-to-face meeting in about 2 years. They're expected to discuss the coronavirus pandemic, climate change, and other urgent global challenges. Attention is also focused on what message they'll have on human rights in Hong Kong and the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, as well as tensions in Myanmar.
The UK is sending its newest aircraft carrier to the Indo-Pacific. The HMS Queen Elizabeth is currently on a 7-month maiden voyage that will take in more than 40 countries. The British government says Vessel will lead a flotilla of ships called the Carrier Strike Group. It'll be joined by a frigate from the Netherlands. The vessels will visit Japan, South Korea and India, among other countries in the region. France and Germany are also planning to send vessels to the Indo-Pacific. European countries are taking a greater interest in the region as China's influence grows. The Japanese government may send Maritime Self-Defense Force vessels to join exercises with the Carrier Strike Group. Japanese Foreign Minister Motegi Toshimitsu met separately with his German and European Union counterparts on the sidelines of the G7 meeting in London. They discussed maritime security and other issues. During talks with German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas, Motegi welcomed Germany's plan to send a naval frigate to the Indo-Pacific region this summer. They also reaffirmed a deepening of security ties, including arranging joint exercises between the frigate and Japan's Maritime Self-Defense Force. In Motegi's talks with EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell, the two shared serious concerns over any unilateral attempts by China to change the status quo in the East China and South China Seas. Motegi welcomed the fact that European Union members early agreed to reinforce the bloc's strategic focus, presence and actions in the Indo-Pacific, apparently with China's increasing influence in mind. Motegi also asked Borrell to ensure that EU countries continue shipping coronavirus vaccines as the European Commission has been imposing export controls on them. Borrell responded favorably to his request. The two also agreed to cooperate on COVID-19 responses, including the vaccine summit in June that Japan plans to co-host with the vaccine alliance, OGAVI, to raise funds for the COVAX facility. COVAX is an international framework aimed at ensuring the equitable sharing of COVID-19 vaccines.
Moving now to Myanmar, where pro-democracy forces say they've created a People's Defense Force to protect civilians from the military crackdown on anti-coup protesters. The National Unity Government, which was set up last month by opponents of military rule, announced the formation of the force on Wednesday. The NUG said in a statement that the new force is a precursor to establishing a federal union army that's expected to include armed ethnic minorities that have been in conflict with the military for decades. But there were no details of how the new force will be organized. The military has issued arrest warrants for members of the NUG. It says an unlawful government was formed to subvert the top decision-making body established by the military. The NUG's ministers include members of Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy Party. A local human rights group says 769 anti-coup protesters and others have been killed by security forces as of Tuesday.
U.S. pharmaceutical giant Pfizer says it has revised upward its projection for vaccine sales this year due to robust global demand for coronavirus vaccines. Company officials raised their forecast for this year's vaccine sales by about 70% to roughly $26 billion. They said the revision would boost projected total revenues for this year to about $72 billion, with those from vaccine sales accounting for more than 35% of that figure. For the first quarter of this year, Pfizer posted 45% increases both in revenue and net income compared with the year before.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 7245 and 7355 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. First, a viewpoint on the 7 million Colombians who protested over President Duque's tax overhaul that included value-added taxes of 20% on basic food items when the populace is becoming poorer. On May Day, protests erupted in a number of European countries, including France, Spain, and Germany. The combined net worth of the richest 100 Americans has increased by $461 billion since Joe Biden was elected president, largely gained from the stimulus packages. On World Press Freedom Day, Edward Snowden criticized Joe Biden for praising independent media while aggressively pursuing the extradition of Julian Assange. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Colombian citizens scored an important victory when they forced the president, Iván Duque, to withdraw a controversial tax reform bill from Congress, since it would have a strong negative impact on the middle and lower classes. Actually, it was a complete blunder, a demonstration that the Colombian administrative power ignores the vicissitudes that the population goes through to survive. The tax reform was not inoffensive at all. But in times of a pandemic that is raging the South American nation, it could be even more devastating. 2.88 million positive cases have been registered there since the beginning of the health crisis, and over 74,000 people have died. This Saturday, in only 24 hours, there were 18,000 contagions and 495 deaths. Under these conditions, Duque intended to impose a value-added tax, the so-called VAT, of 19% on a group of products such as eggs, meat, fish, coffee, and salt, which would increase the price of the basic food basket. At the same time, workers with salaries of 2.4 million pesos or more would be obliged to pay income tax, when the minimum cost of living for a single person is about 3.5 million pesos. The imposition of new taxes on pensioners was also a goal of that bill. But to top it all, there was also a proposal to apply an absurd tax charge on burials, as if the grief of families who have lost a loved one were not enough. Protests across the country began on April 28th. Some 7 million people participated in the cities of Bogotá, Medellín, Cali, Barranquilla, Pereira, and Bucaramanga stood out. On Saturday, President Duque said he would make modifications to the program, which did not stop the people's rage. And finally, yesterday, Sunday, he announced the document's removal from Parliament and added that it is necessary to hold meetings with various sectors of society to reach a consensus on a new reform. During these days of demonstrations, the police and the army repressed the population with excessive force, and there are mentions of up to 10 deaths, although there's no official number of victims. However, it helped to show that the ideals of unity, determination, and courage facilitate the defeat of neoliberal plans that are trying to be imposed in the region.
Protests erupted in a number of European countries over the weekend as May Day demonstrators called for better worker protection in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic and the economic crisis attributed to it. Protesters took to the streets of France, Spain, and Germany on May the 1st, marking International Labour Day and commemorating the working class. Protest rallies that typically occur every year in many countries on May Day took on a new meaning this year after months of lockdowns and economic hardships that have impacted on the livelihoods of most employees and workers. In French cities, demonstrators clashed with police, breaking windows and starting fires. Police responded by firing tear gas and arresting protesters. Demonstrators took to the streets in several cities in Germany, throwing fireworks, bottles and rocks in protests over issues ranging from social inequality, rising rents, the country's immigration policy, and in opposition to coronavirus curbs. People also rallied in more than 70 cities across Spain in the first Labor Day demonstrations since the pandemic began. The demonstration in Madrid, which was limited to 1,000 people, began at midday under the slogan, "Now it's time to deliver," and with the participants marching from the town hall to the city's Puerta de Sol Square. The combined net worth of the top 100 ultra-rich people in the United States has skyrocketed by $195 billion since Biden took office, this according to Bloomberg's calculations. From his election to his inauguration, they added $267 billion to their fortunes, bringing their total gain to $461 billion since November the 4th. The rise in billionaires' wealth in the first 100 days of Biden's presidency is around 20% of the cash stockpile they raked in between Trump's inauguration and the 2020 election. According to available data, they became $860 billion richer over that period. Media reports say that the gains are largely based on an enormous stimuli measure to help the economy mitigate the coronavirus crisis, and this resulted in a stock market rally. In addition to the $1 trillion worth of measures agreed by Trump, Biden approved another $1.9 trillion stimulus package. That gave another boost to stocks, with the S&P 500 and Dow Jones indices jumping around 10% since the inauguration of Biden. American billionaires collectively and their net worth has surged by 55% in the past 13 months, hitting $4.56 trillion, this according to a report by the Institute for Policy Studies and Americans for Tax Fairness. Heads of tech and e-commerce giants such as Amazon and Facebook were the biggest winners, both at the height of the pandemic and during the latest rally in the stock market. Whistleblower Edward Snowden says the U.S. government still seeks to jail WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange for the act of journalism, despite U.S. President Joe Biden's claim of praise for, quote, heroic independent media on World Press Freedom Day. Snowden tweeted from Moscow, where he is in exile, quote, this would be more persuasive if the White House weren't aggressively seeking a 175-year sentence for the publisher of award-winning journalism of global importance, despite pleas from every significant press freedom and human rights organization.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, though podcasts have not been updated. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts. We will conclude with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Monday was World Press Freedom Day, and Reporters Without Borders called on the European Union to do more to protect journalists in Europe. The German government announced more ambitious plans to cut carbon emissions following a court ruling that the current laws were insufficient. Then brief reports on an important election in Scotland. Britain and France have sent naval ships to the Isle of Jersey over Brexit rules. Two reports on the far right in Europe. And short updates on the global pandemic and vaccine situations. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Today is World Press Freedom Day. Reporters Without Borders is calling on the European Union to do more to protect journalists here in Europe. Their annual report says that journalists around the world are finding it increasingly difficult to investigate and report on sensitive stories, and Europe is no exception.
Independent media in Hungary almost completely dismantled.
The European Union missed the opportunity to come in and intervene.
Regional journalists in Poland in distress.
I couldn't imagine having someone to tell me what I'm allowed to write about and what I can't write about.
Female reporters in Slovenia facing verbal attacks.
Every day we are becoming such threats, such insults, attacks.
According to Reporters Without Borders, the media situation in the EU is deteriorating. They strongly criticize the EU's lack of action in defending the freedom of the press. For example, in Poland, its diverse media landscape is now under threat. We visit Radio 357 in Warsaw, an independent station which broadcasts over the Internet. It's run by some very experienced journalists. Ernest Zozuń worked for the public broadcaster Trojka for more than three decades. Until last year when he was fired, he says, for opposing propaganda in favor of the ruling party.
It was our bosses, the program directors. They would tell us what topics to cover and what topics not to cover. It was our supervisors who were our censors.
Katarzyna Pachelska wasn't fired. She resigned from her job as deputy editor-in-chief at Dziennik Zachodni. Last year, the regional newspaper was bought by the state-run oil refiner Orlen.
I think they'll want to have reports showing them in a positive light. There will be national elections in Poland in 3 years. Regional newspapers like Dziennik Zachodni are very well suited to spreading their message.
Czasopisma i gazety, no to są świetnym przekaźnikiem tego typu komunikatów.
Since the Law and Justice Party came to power in 2015, the government brought public broadcasters under its control. In addition, it has used state advertising to favor loyal outlets. In the World Press Freedom Index, the country is now at position 64, down 46 places in 6 years. But the government says its low ranking is politically motivated.
I think Poland is an example of how things should be when it comes to free media and criticism of the government. Everyone has the right to criticize, and they make use of it.
Katarzyna Pachelska has a new job at a regional internet platform. The takeover of her former newspaper was put on hold by a court in Warsaw for now. But Katarzyna Pachelska is worried.
Press freedom is certainly key when it comes to democracy in Poland. If this freedom vanishes, there will be consequences.
A problem well known in Brussels. The EU Commission says they are concerned but cannot do much about it.
We don't have still sufficiently strong EU legislation which would protect the media. So it is not so easy to take decisive action.
Journalists in Poland want to fight for their independence, just like their colleagues in Hungary or Slovenia. But they also say they need to see more action from Brussels to defend media freedom in the European Union.
Well, the German government has announced plans for more ambitious cuts to carbon emissions. The changes follow a constitutional court ruling from last week that said the country's current climate laws are insufficient. But many are asking whether the new goals are a real commitment to more action or an effort to gain more votes ahead of upcoming national elections.
The climate change activists probably surprised themselves with what they achieved. Young environmentalists have long accused the government of not taking action fast enough on climate change. And last week, Germany's highest court ruled they were right. Now politicians have to respond. Young people remind us that we are too slow rather than too quick. We need to take action more quickly. The courts have ruled that according to our basic law, not just the freedoms of those living today has to be protected, but also the freedom of future generations. The decision to speed up Germany's transition to renewable energy has a lot to do with the upcoming national elections. Chancellor Merkel's coalition government wants to finalize plans on how to move away from fossil fuels faster by next week. Finance Minister Olaf Scholz said the cabinet was unanimous about the changes. We are reassessing our climate targets for 2030. We have to achieve more early on, and we are formulating a plan to reduce emissions by 65%. We want to develop an intermediate plan to reduce emissions by 88% by 2040. And much quicker than previously discussed, we want Germany to become carbon neutral by 2045. With the new goals, both coalition partners, the Conservatives and the Social Democrats, are showing they don't want the Green Party to dominate the climate change debate, especially in an election year.
Voters in Scotland are going to the polls today in an election that could decide the fate of its independence movement. Scotland has been part of the United Kingdom since 1707. But many Scots say that they feel poorly represented by British decision makers. In a 2014 referendum on independence, 55% of voters favored staying in the UK. But 2 years later, a firm majority opposed leaving the European Union. First Minister Nicola Sturgeon says that a fresh majority of her Scottish National Party would be a mandate for pursuing a second independence drive.
Britain and France have sent Navy and coastal patrol ships to waters near the island of Jersey in the English Channel. This after about 50 French fishing boats sailed to Jersey to blockade the island's main harbour. France says the new post-Brexit rules unfairly restrict the ability of French fishermen and women to work in UK waters.
French far-right leader Marine Le Pen has been acquitted of breaking hate speech laws. The charges stem from tweets that she posted in 2015 of Islamic State atrocities. Le Pen said she tweeted the images after a prominent French journalist compared her party to the Islamist militant group. Here in Germany, officials are warning of a rise in far-right extremism. Police recorded more than 23,000 far-right crimes in 2020. That was a record high. Now, the new statistics were published on the same day that police arrested a suspected neo-Nazi accused of sending threats and hate mail to politicians and public figures.
The European Medicines Agency has started evaluating the use of Pfizer-BioNTech's COVID-19 vaccine for 12 to 15-year-olds. Authorization is seen as a crucial step towards achieving herd immunity. Lawmakers in Denmark have dropped the Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccine from their official campaign, but they've agreed to allow voluntary use of the shot. And Novavax has told the EU it plans to begin delivering its COVID-19 vaccine towards the end of the year. The deal will supply about 200 million doses for booster shots.
Sri Lanka has imposed tough new restrictions in an effort to contain the spread of the virus. Public gatherings and weddings are banned and schools will remain closed until further notice. Cambodia is set to lift its lockdown in the capital, Phnom Penh, despite recording another record in daily cases. The country is battling its worst outbreak to date. And North Korea has warned its citizens to brace for a prolonged struggle against the virus. The UN has earmarked nearly 2 million vaccine doses for Pyongyang, but it's unclear how and when those shipments will arrive.
The government in Nepal has issued an urgent appeal for AstraZeneca vaccines so we can complete its program of second doses. More than 1.5 million Nepalese have received their first shot, and they now need a second for full protection. U.S. President Joe Biden has set a goal of vaccinating 70% of American adults with at least one shot by the 4th of July. Now, if that goal is achieved, it would mean that half of the entire U.S. population will have been vaccinated by early July. The head of Italy's medicine agency says his country could be administering shots to 1 million people per day by the end of this month. Italy had one of the highest death tolls from the virus in Europe at just over 120,000 deaths.
The World Health Organization is planning to set up a global pandemic hub in the German capital, Berlin, to gather and analyze data on emerging pandemic threats. Canada has authorized the use of the BioNTech Pfizer vaccine on children from 12 years old and upwards. It's the first country in the world to approve a vaccine for children. And Britain's planning to offer a third vaccine jab to everyone over 50 in the autumn in the hope of eradicating the virus in the UK.
India has reported over 412,000 new COVID-19 cases and almost 4,000 deaths on Thursday, setting records for both. The virus is spreading from the cities into the countryside, where public health is even more limited. There have been fresh clashes between police and protesters in the Colombian capital, Bogota. It is the latest violence, highlighting days of protests against economic inequality and police brutality. At least 24 people have been killed in the unrest this past week.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 25th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.